It's only natural if you found yourself despondent at the state of the domestic violence crisis in this country. At times, it certainly feels as though there are simply no solutions to reach and sort of solve this issue. No easy ones, at least. But in communities across Australia, there are groups of people working day in and day out to protect women from harm and help men change and teach children how to break the cycle of violence. And while governments of all levels take the time to establish long-term strategies to address violence against women, you might be asking yourself one question: what can you do to help? Annabel Daniel is the Chief Executive of Women's Community Shelters and the Chair of Domestic Violence New South Wales. Annabel, your organisation isn't just on the front lines of this crisis. It also works with communities across the country to educate school kids on the ways to prevent domestic violence. Tell me about this Walk the Walk program.
It's Walk the Talk program.
Apologies.
No, that's okay. It's an absolutely fantastic program. And what we wanted to do was take young men and young women beyond just listening about what respectful relationships and consent education could be and actually engage them, engage their hearts and their hands as well as their minds, and ask them to support their local domestic violence shelter by doing something practical and by extending that out over the course of the year. So it wasn't just a case that you walk in, teach them something and they might be, their minds might be there, or it might be focused on their maths class at 3 o'clock or whatever, but to actually step up and take action and do something positive to address domestic and family violence in their local community. And we've found that's been incredibly powerful.
Yeah. What sort of things have been told to you after visiting one of these services?
We've had the most incredible feedback. I mean, we have about 98% of the kids who do the program rated as very good or excellent. 100% of the teachers say it's fantastic. And if I'm just looking at what we've done this year so far, so we've actually reached over 2,000 students in 9 weeks. We've presented at 12 high schools for 9 of our shelters. And some of the things that the kids have done have been including doing Easter bake sales and chocolate drives to make sure that the kids at the shelters have got something nice for Easter. They've done International Women's Day events and volunteered their time, and they've done cake sales and fundraisers at school. And that's all come off the back of a boys' school that started this program about 5 years ago, where the boys spontaneously did something for their shelter in their local area.
It really makes you think how state and federal governments and high-level policymakers are sort of throwing paper at the issue at the moment and debating the issue. It's sort of the community spirit in Australia that sort of mucks in and gets things going. Tell me about the navigating healthy relationships part of the program. What sort of toolkit are you sort of giving students? What is, and more importantly, what's been lacking in this space?
I think what's really important to note is with young people, we actually have to go beyond consent education, because once you're at the point of consent, you've actually often negotiated a bunch of really tricky relationship dynamics. And we need to recognise that teenagers are in relationships themselves. You know, it's not just about whether they might see healthy relationships modelled at home between their parents or even unhealthy ones. We need to acknowledge that teenagers are trialling relationships themselves. And so equipping them with the skills to understand what relationships of equality and generosity look like, teaching them about consent, teaching them about what domestic and family violence and also coercive control looks like in their relationships, so that they can be safe in navigating those first relationships and in supporting each other and their peers to recognise what the signs of danger might be.
I mean, I've been speaking to experts in the sector all week about the need to shift away from collective blame and sort of find ways to get men and boys engaged in the prevention of violence against women. Have you found that this kind of interaction has bridged that gap for men, particularly for men or boys who don't feel like it's their place to take action on this issue or somehow feel blamed in some of the messages that they've received?
I think that's such an incredibly important point, because I think a lot of young men feel very uneasy discussing these kinds of topics and knowing what to say and what not to say. And where you give them a concrete channel to be able to do something positive and be upstanders within their community, they will grab that challenge with both hands. We also see that through amazing service clubs like Rotary and all of the wonderful men who help our local shelters by doing things like knocking cabinets together and building kitchens and doing projects and all kinds of things when we're establishing new shelters and who continue to volunteer. I think where you can give people a concrete project in their local community where they can be upstanders and do something positive, that is an incredibly powerful way of engaging men and boys as part of the solution.
It's 11 minutes past five. The Chair of Domestic Violence New South Wales, Annabel Daniel, is here. We're talking about the role community organisations can play in solving the issue of violence against women as the debate certainly at the state and federal level rolls on. And in fact, yesterday we saw the federal government take steps to address this with the $925 million to be spent over the next 5 years to help women flee violent relationships, among other measures to reduce online misogyny. What are your thoughts on this initial announcement? Is it enough and is it targeted enough?
Well, I think what we need to note is that this payment is something that has previously been happening, and not all women have been able to access the full amount available to them. Only $1,500 of that $5,000 is available in cash, and quite often what women need to do is actually get a rental bond when they're getting out, with the cost of housing across Australia at the moment being an issue of national significance. I'm not quite sure that it gets there. Look, that said, this is a first step. But we also need to make sure that there are enough frontline staff and not enough wraparound support staff to be able to help women access that payment, because it's not without its conditions and its red tape around that. So we need to make sure that specialist frontline services are adequately resourced and supported so women can access everything that's available to them in a time of crisis. You've got a lot on your plate when you're leaving an abusive relationship and you need a lot of support.
And do those women need yet another campaign, or do they need frontline services?
We need a range of things. In terms of prevention, that's work that we can't stop doing. We need to talk about what it means, but we also need to be far more targeted in the messages that we give to different kinds of people. You know, we can talk to people at a population level, but we also need to find clever and useful ways to intervene with men who might be at risk of using violence, for example, or with first-time users of violence when they come to attention. We also need to make sure, as I've said, that boys and men are engaged in healthy ways that can actually help reduce the problem rather than enhance it.
We hear in other social service sectors this issue of overlap, where differing charities, although well-intentioned, it sometimes can be at loggerheads about the outcomes that they're wanting to pursue. Do you sense that? I mean, we've heard from a number of organisations this week calling for a more integrated response between prevention agencies and frontline services. How essential is that?
I think it's absolutely critical, because you can't hive off work in terms of prevention and allow just one group to do it. You have to integrate all of your prevention work with work that's already happening on the front line in communities. There's no one-size-fits-all message that's going to reach everybody, and local communities are the absolute experts in responding to what they see at the local level. You know, you're not going to expect that the same program, for example, might work in Alice Springs or Northwest Western Australia as it would in metropolitan Sydney. And services that are working on the ground with their local communities and engaged with all of the actors in the space are best placed to determine and try the kinds of prevention work and response work that is going to meet the needs of their local community.
Of course, the May budget is just around the corner. I'm wondering if what you're hearing, and if you're hearing that the $925 million is an entree to a main course, if you like, or is this the main course for the sector?
Well, I very much hope that it is only the entree. I have been quite outspoken in my calls. I believe that if we are going to respond to the scale of the crisis that we have in front of us, we need to invest $1 billion a year. There's a lot of systems that we need to change, and we need to make sure that the frontline services are adequately resourced to meet the demands that are coming at us every single day.
We'll have to leave it there. Pleasure to talk to you, Chief Executive of Women's Community Shelters and the Chair of Domestic Violence New South Wales, Annabel Daniel. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
ABCRN helps you understand the world. Find more of our stories on the ABC Listen app.